Okay, sure. Today is the 19th of February, 2015. This is our first of two synthesis sessions that we're going to have in preparation for producing a communique and combining the results from four separate tracks that we have hosted to date. The purpose is to coalesce some of the work that's been done, identify some gaps, to revisit the approach that the co-champions have proposed for each of the sessions, and also identify any additional speakers that we might want to invite to sessions that are scheduled for between now and the end of the summit. So following the agenda, I think we would start with track A, that's Leo and Rom, and primarily Leo because of Rom's travel schedule. Again, I think Leo's got slides for this, so those of you who are going to follow along, download those from the page as indicated. Leo will read the slide numbers as we go through this. We'll probably try to keep this part of the presentation to 15 minutes and then have discussion thereafter.
Before that, Mark, this is Ram here. I guess everyone knows the final dates of this summit. The ontology meet, or whatever is it, ontology summit meeting, the final meeting?
The symposium.
Symposium meeting, yeah.
Why don't you state it here now, Ram?
Yeah, I believe, I'm just trying to see what are the dates we decided on. May sometime, I think. So just trying to... do you have any idea on that? I think it's...
I believe it's April 13th and 14th.
April 13th and 14th, okay. Yeah, that's right. April 13th and 14th, okay. So we are going to have it April 13th and 14th, and it will be the same place as we had last time. So
which is the NSF building
NSF,
in Boston,
which
is Virginia.
And I think that worked out pretty well last time. It was convenient for people. Now, only a couple of things we need to do before the mark, about a month, sometime beginning of March. We will have to contact Fuad Ramia, who is the one who is coordinating at NITRD, and we got to give him the requirements. What do we require? Are we going to do it the same way as we're going to do last time?
Yeah, so Ram, I would save this the organizing material like this for our organizing committee.
Oh, that's fine. I just wanted to kind of make sure that we get this thing.
So I'm not sure if it's scheduled for Friday, but we probably
sorry,
get into
that. That meeting until Friday due to travel. So, Leo, can you go ahead then with this?
Okay. Well, thanks, folks. What I suggest is you download the slides yourselves, so you have them available for that everyone. All the tracks are presenting here. This is track A, so Ram and I are the co-champions. Our focus is on ontology integration in the Internet of Things. And of course, just a reminder, this is Synthesis 1. We've had one session of track A, and we'll have another one, much like all the other tracks. But what we want to do is come together during the synthesis sections or sessions and try to put together what we've heard from across the tracks and give the individual tracks perspectives on the commonalities, the gaps, specific insights, and of course think about it for structuring the communique, which is the product, final product, if you will, of the summit that we hopefully can all agree on. So slide two, just a real quick restatement of our goal. and our mission. So we're focusing in this track on integration interoperability issues. It includes interoperability and integration with respect to particular case studies, too, of Internet of Things. The Internet of Things, almost by definition, encompasses everything or nearly everything, increasingly more every day. But, you know, our focus is on current approaches, using those case studies when we can. In integration interoperability, we'll look at the gaps in those approaches. They may be a range of approaches, as we'll mention today, but also issues of vertical integration, including granularity issues, and methodologies or methods for achieving integration interoperability and, of course, working across multimodal interfaces. So the slide three is just a restatement of our speakers in the previous track A session, Dr. Steve Ray, Dr. Payam Barnaghi, and Dr. Jack Hodges. We're going to actually pull some of their material in the coming slides. So next slide, slide four. We're kind of restating the case studies that our speakers addressed for that first session, which is Steve Ray, in particular, sensor integration and smart grid, smart healthcare, Jack Hodges, and more general Web of Things, Internet of Things, and a framework for that by Payam Barnaghi. So relatively more general, but we'll emphasize certain things in all of these. Next slide is slide five. Our speakers have, you know, provided a range of approaches. For example, Payam Barnaghi had a range of simpler approaches. For example, HyperCat, and what we see displayed there is a kind of a schemata, if you will, for the HyperCat system, which is emphasizing semantic annotation to provide some support, semantic support for the Web of Things, the Internet of Things. So it really means something like servers are maybe providing catalogs of resources to clients. And you can think of a catalog as an array of URIs. So it's a kind of triple store related, but perhaps it's a simpler meta level representation, much like a card catalog. And then each resource in the catalog is annotated then with additional metadata. So this is where additional RDF triples come into play. So that's the perspective of HyperCat. And I'm referencing slides 14 and 17 in his slide set, which is available, you know, on the February 5th track A session. Next slide is slide six. Steve Ray. We have some noise in the background.
Okay, I'm going to mute everyone. If you are speaking and you need to unmute, that will be star seven.
Okay, can you hear me now?
We got you.
Okay, yeah. Whatever you did worked because my control, my star seven wasn't working before. To continue here, so we'll have to make sure that the speakers all have all do star seven when they're ready to present then. Okay, we're on slide six. So Steve Ray displayed a mostly automated attempted automated system to do address integration interoperability issues. So we have his high-level system design kind of using JSON data and a ontology. It's kind of like a template for the approach that he's attempted. There are some simple, maybe more complex manual mapping steps from, for example, the JSON entities to his target ontology. I mean, that's one manual step, but sometimes that mapping also it can be more complex. So we see in the lower part of the lower right a picture from his one of his slides, slide 9, I believe, that shows a little more complexity. So many-to-many representation sometimes in that mapping. So we've seen, you know, annotation method, and now an automated mapping integration method with some manual steps. Slide 7, next slide. Jack Hodges, in his presentation, really didn't try to do automatic ontology matching mapping. His comment, and these are from his slides, are basically that no approach is 100%. And really for usability, any generated mappings that could come out of an automated process would have to be checked manually by subject matter experts anyways. So their approach is to use bridge ontologies, in some sense an ontology that maps through an ontology to another ontology can be considered a bridge ontology. But also then, you know, it requires mappings between those ontologies. And of course, in the OWL world, RDF world, typically that's through, imports initially, but also equivalence relations and various other, you know, superclass, subclass relations between the classes and the different ontologies. His focus, of course, was on healthcare and basically wearables for healthcare, so wearable sensors and devices. So that's kind of three related approaches that addressing interoperability and integration. From annotation, which is a relatively weak way to achieve some semantics and some relationship between the mappings, if you will, between two ontologies, but also a range of automated to manual methods in many cases. Although we're interested in automated methods, we're left with a trade-off sometimes as to confirming how adequate those mappings are. So gaps now in slide 8. Most of these systems are prototypes. There are emerging ontologies that are being developed across the board for Internet of Things, obviously ranging from earlier work in sensors, and we, the other sessions in particular, heard speakers address some of the sensor ontologies and the work with sensors, which typically would require fairly low-level interactions between devices, perhaps, that exist on the internet, and higher level ontologies, and of course, another potential gap is a lack of semantic annotation tools. There are some, obviously, and there's annotation properties in ontologies using semantic web technologies, but what you'd like to have is automated annotation tools, perhaps that use some ontologies. And then prospectively, a lack of tools for validation of ontologies. Some of these range from reasoning engines, from description logic reasoners that can do checks on consistency. But for validation, we also know that it brings up issues in really evaluation of ontologies, the usefulness of ontologies that we addressed 2 years ago in the Ontology Summit, intrinsic issues and extrinsic issues. How well does an ontology, you know, meet the specific domain and the requirements? There's more work needed on representing events. There are a lot of activities related to events and event ontologies, and more so every day. Typically, what we've seen in commercial world is very low-level events that are more like sensor-based events, and which have to be aggregated and made sense of at larger levels. The Internet of Things, the ontologies also have to deal with time-varying data. A couple of speakers made that point. It's not to say that ontologies in the semantic web cannot accommodate that. They in fact can with a open world, but largely since there's in many cases only a partially automated update of resources on the semantic web, mostly at the instance level, which is what you would expect. It's perhaps incomplete so far for the needs for the Internet of Things. And of course, as is in most cases, Internet of Things and outside of that, we're still grappling towards more automated methods for integration. Slide 9 is basically just a synopsis from taken from three of Payam's slides from his perspective. So these are perspective insights that may or may not be addressed across the board and across all of our tracks, but we wanted to bring those forward. Everything from designing for large scale, and then of course tools for large scale, and APIs for those tools, and then emphasizing that we need to think of who will use the semantics we provide, and think about requirements up front. Provide means to update and change the annotations. Of course, Payam's perspective is you're going to need a lot of semantic annotations to things that exist, and so in effect, it's working at a higher level, maybe a meta level, but those annotations over the instance level data and the ontologies for Internet of Things can be more and more useful. From my perspective, it means that we should consider, you know, really annotations as now being, you know, symbolic and interpreted too, which currently as annotation properties in RDF, and now they're not quite there yet. But so our annotations really should become more regular RDF triples. I won't go through all these, but some of these we obviously know and we've applied in many other cases for many other applications of semantic technologies and ontologies. Reuse as much as you can, linking your data and descriptions to other existing resources. Many of us work in the backwaters of the internet for specific customers, and it's not necessarily exposed on the internet, but more and more of our material and our resources and our objects are being exposed on the internet. So it's something that we have to worry about, interactions and aggregations across the internet from these things that are now on the internet. And then rules and best practices for designing why we need specific things such as a particular attribute, property. A reminder that the most widely used ontologies and semantic descriptions on the web are simple ones. I think mainly because in terms of the number of people that can agree and reuse resources without necessarily knowing the extent of the analysis and the requirements that went into designing an ontology, that the earlier adopted ones were simple. It's going to be the case that, on the one hand, we may want continue to have a number of those, but we know that we're also going to have more complicated ones as we go down vertically in terms of the granularity of the sensors that are being added to the entire internet. And the kinds of things we want to do, running appliances in your home, for example, having ontologies that are working locally. And then just a reminder that, semantics is part of the solution. Like everything else, there's no silver bullet. It's just, it represents for us a leap forward, a revolutionary advance that really, can't be matched by other technologies, but it's not the whole ball of wax. So with that, I'd like to invite Ram. Any other comments you'd like to make? Star 7, you're probably muted.
No, Leo, really, I think you covered that really well, the whole thing. Unless we have Steve Ray is, I guess, the only presenter who is online right now. Steve, do you have any comments on this, or we are okay?
No comment. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, we can hear you. We tried to summarize as to the best of our abilities, and I think Leo did an excellent job.
Yeah, Leo did a great job. No problem. I wrote one thing in the chat, but that was a minor thing.
Okay, noted.
Okay, good. Thank you. Mark, back to you.
One thing, Leo, is that one of the things which Michael Grininger wanted to see is that in terms of similarity to other tracks, and since I missed a number of those things, I'm unable to make any comments on that unless you have some insight.
I think I made some comments about the sensor ontology work, which is, I think that it was probably track B, is that right?
Track two?
Track B, yes, semantic sensor network ontology. So Torsten and Gary's. The decision making and reasoning. Well, we highlighted the validation of ontologies, but of course, rule reasoning at a higher level will become more and more increasingly important. So that's where Mike Bennett and Michael Gruninger's track C come into play. And of course, as both these folks will talk about track D. There's a range of standards that we haven't addressed, some of which are have been in play, some of which are emerging, and some of which are, in fact, just emerging. So we'll listen to them, and then we'll kind of probably come back and try to pick out similarities and, common questions.
Sounds great. So track B is, as you mentioned, beyond semantic sensor network ontologies. I think, Gary, you're online. If you can star 7, be happy to.
Yes, I did star 7. Can you hear me?
Yes, we did.
Okay, great. Well, first, I have to apologize. I've been on travel, so we didn't prepare any slides. Dawson is not available, I guess, so we didn't coordinate. But I can say a few things on track B, and we will provide slides later on after Dawson and I have a chance to confer, okay?
That's great.
All right. So, as Leo mentioned, semantic sensor network is sort of widely used within IoT. It's soon going to be an OGC standard. So it's been a source of good work in this area, and we thought we'd bring together a variety of applications for IoT. We tried to explore how SSO, semantic sensor network, ontology has been expanded and enhanced for use and things like smart objects and services and so forth. And our first session had an introduction by me, discussing how sensors are a big part of IoT and the results of result in some big data challenges such as heterogeneity. One thing I pointed out in my introduction is that we frequently will misunderstand the data involved in IoT, which results in inappropriate analysis. We think that semantic technologies such as afforded by SSN and associated reasoning can play a major role in IoT. And so as part of session one, we had Jeff Voess provide slides. He was unable to actually present the slide because of personal difficulties, but Thorsten did his best to sort of relay the message on Jeff's slides. A lot of it was covering 10 primitive areas, essentially conceptual areas, and sort of the exposition of each of those. If you look at those slides, you get a sense about, in terms of network concepts and things of that nature, how improved semantics for those really help the overall effort of IoT. We also had Corey Henson provide a very, very nice presentation on the semantic sensor network ontology. He called it past, present, and future. And so we covered how did the standard had been developed, its modularity, some of the things that I had covered that are important, I think are important issues, not only within IoT, but big data as a whole. He talked about the relationship between this work and things like semantic web enablement. He talked about in the future that we might have two different approaches, semantics in the cloud, where all sensor observations are sent to the cloud for annotation, semantic annotation and processing there in the way that Leo did highlight in his discussion. So obviously there's overlap there. The second approach beyond semantics in the cloud is semantics at the edge, which is downscale semantic representation and reasoning for local processing. And this turns out to be something similar to what Thorsten outlined in terms of sort of general versus local types of approaches. So that was a part of session one. We had planned for session two in March to have Jean-Paul Calvamonte talking, along with Chuck Vardaman, who's actually on the call today, who give an example of maybe a pattern that people might be interested in working on and developing. Thorsten himself with his partner, Sylvia Natel, will present, and Barry Smith will be our last presenter in session two. So stay tuned for that. We'll have more on that as we go on. I do have a little bit of say about the larger issues that were raised and some thoughts of that. What are the key ideas emerging? Well, one of the things is the similarity to some of the big data issues, such as explosion of standards, reliance on things like metadata vocabulary. So IoT tosses around the idea of resources and maybe catalogs. People have different ideas about what resources might be named and what they mean. So those are areas where semantic analysis might really be able to help. Obviously, reuse of existing ontologies, good ones like SSN and Pravo are important. They are not unique to IoT, obviously. We also think a larger issue is that more of the possible value of and need for a modular approach, because as things get bigger, they get more difficult to sort of understand as a whole. A modular approach approach and putting modules together in meaningful ways seems like a reasonable idea. That was explored in the Big Data Ontology Summit we had last year. I think that there's more that can be said here. As Leo mentioned as part of his presentation, Steve Ray mentioned this too, there's a practicality of bridge ontologies here about putting things together, sort of relates to modularity in a way, but the idea of having these big areas that you can somehow, which were different or sort of disparate and heterogeneous, bringing those together with bridge ontologies. That seems to be an issue, how to do that and its value. I will mention other issues such as do lightweight sensor ontology scale? What is realistic for ontological commitments to big heterogeneous data? Should ontologies be used to annotate IoT with the semantic annotation that Leo mentioned, or to represent it more in more conceptual models, which I think is the longer-term approach, but may not be easy to do in the short term, but that would be needed for reasoning and understanding. There is the general issue of how to handle IoT interoperability, because the things are disparate, as I mentioned before, things as easy to say as resources are widely different in people's interpretation. The dynamic nature of IoT also makes interoperability challenging, so we have to address that. And I'll just end on some semantic issue that Thorsten made something of that I think is really important as part of our communique, that there is two fundamentally different approaches. The centralized approach of spatially distributed heterogeneous sensor data, and we have things on top essentially handling that distribution, versus local intelligent sensor networks, sort of like smart objects, which is more distributed processing, in-place processing. So I think those are some of the major issues and highlights of our session. Oh, I guess I should add one more thing. I think a common topic will be tooling to handle some of those things, which we haven't necessarily discussed in great detail. But the question is, what type of tooling do we need to support things like modular ontologies and schemas? And that's it.
Great. Those are excellent. I tried to capture some of those last comments that you provided in the chat. If you want to correct or amplify, that would be helpful, because we'll get those into the record since there aren't any slides at this point. So that's great.
Great. Thank you. I will try to do that.
All right. Moving on to track C. This is focused on decision making, and I'm going to turn this over to Mike Bennett, star 7, if you haven't already.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Super.
Fantastic. Okay. So track C, on slide 2, summarizing our mission statement and so on, which we've extracted from the theme of the summit. So what we're looking at in track C is to try and identify a methodology for development of terminologies for multimodal data or ontologies, developing appropriate ontologies, testing methods, interoperability for various domains that we're looking at, and primarily the use of these kinds of ontologies in decision making and so on. So slide 3, breaking that down slightly, what we're aiming to do is identify the key problems in the Internet of Things which require or would benefit from automated reasoning. So that being one of the motivations for using ontologies in the Internet of Things, for example, for decision support, for integration and operability between devices, allowing richer interactions among smart objects and so on. And what we want to do in this track is address the challenges for these applications. So what is the role of different ontology languages, the trade-off between expressiveness and tractability, whether to use existing ontologies, you know, are the ontologies that are out there adequate to support the requirements that we're seeing in the Internet of Things, or do we need to create new ones? Do they need to be created bespoke and so on? What is the scalability of the different approaches to semantic integration and automated reasoning? So this track focuses on the the reasoning and the processing for decision making and so on, but there's a clear interaction between that and integration, as we'll see. So hopefully that leads towards some of our synthesis with the other tracks. So slide four. So our first session is last week, 12th of February. What we did was we explored several approaches that people have taken to automated inference in a range of applications. So we had stuff in complex event processing, including some challenging military type of scenarios, situation awareness and so on, all the way through to manufacturing. So there's a lot there on situation and process and so on, as we'll see. Slide five. So we had four speakers at our first session. First we had Joseph Capena of Bellerophon Mobile, who presented on ontology-based information-centric tactical edge networking. That's a mouthful. That's all about the challenges of military types of networks and devices and so on. Then Adrian Paschke of the Freie Universität Berlin presented on going from semantic complex event processing to a ubiquitous pragmatic web. So he focused a lot on events and so on. Then Michael Gruninger of the University of Toronto spoke about process ontologies for smart objects in manufacturing. And finally, Ken Buklowski of Northeastern University presented on situation awareness and decision making. And that was actually a good introduction to the previous slides. So we did them in perhaps the wrong order there. So I've just taken the liberty of pulling out a couple of themes from the different presentations, with apologies to the presenter if these are not the themes that you would have wanted to pull out. So slide seven, in Joe Capena's presentation on tactical edge networks, he talked about the very interesting and varied challenges and constraints that are seen in these kinds of tactical military and similar types of networks, where you have huge variations in connectivity, scale, types of devices, human versus non-human originated information, all sorts of interesting challenges there. He presented an architecture of information-centric networking for the interchange of all the information that comes out of these sensors. Talked a bit about the use of OWL Lite and the use of RDF metadata to be able to integrate across those various, very varied pieces of information. And an observation which we'll come back to, a little semantics goes a long way. So again, you see how we're starting to integrate with the integration subject here slightly. So that was some of the themes from that presentation. Then on slide eight, Adrian Paschke took us a deep dive into the world of events and event processing, looked at some of the challenges around semantic complex event processing and how to frame events semantically, i.e. making declarative models of events in the same way that one would typically have an ontology of more static things, and thereby enabling complex reasoning over situations and other event-related contexts. He showed us some reference architecture for that, the use of various ontology design patterns and so on. And then with that declarative knowledge in place, being able to use rules, specifically rule ML, to draw more interesting conclusions from those events. And then that led into an explanation of the pragmatic web and how that kind of takes us a level beyond the semantic web, if you like. Slide nine, Michael Gruninger presented on process ontologies. This is in the context of manufacturing. So in typical manufacturing environments nowadays, there's a lot of use of RFID, and that gives rise to a large amount of information in the Internet of Things as these things get passed around from one set of sensors to another, one process to another, and so on. He talked about a process specification language and how this can be framed semantically as an ontology, so you can then carry out queries on the processes and do reasoning on it and so on. And then some interesting practical conclusions from that. Not all axioms are created equal. Again, the need to have minimal subsets of ontology, to have a common language that pulls all this together, and yet be able to apply the logic and the reasoning and apply other kinds of rules and so on at the point where it's needed. And there was some interesting stuff on the use and identification of lemmas in order to apply the decision making where it's needed, while not having the kind of performance challenges and other challenges of having all those axioms all the time, as it were. I probably haven't made much sense of that, but that was an interesting, again, that balance between decision making at the point where it's needed versus the bigger picture of concepts and so on. Slide 10. So then Clem Buklowski gave us a nice overview of situation awareness and how this relates to decision making. To make decisions, you need context. What is the context of a decision? Well, it's a situation. So again, we need a formal model of situation, very much resonating with the earlier presentation on defining events and situations and so on. Ken gave us an overview of situation theory and a number of models that exist in that body of theory for defining decision processes. I've listed some of them here, the OODA loop, JDL, DFIG, KIDS, and so on. Gave us a nice insight into what those different models look like, and then how these could be applied in different practical business scenarios, such as healthcare, customer service, cloud computing, and finance. So slide 11, I've pulled out a couple of insights. I went through the chat log. There's a lot of very interesting questions and answers. Huge thanks to all of our speakers for giving very detailed answers to all the questions that came up. I've tried to round these up into four very broad categories because there are a lot of insights here, and I think we can pull some of these together into our synthesis. So there's kind of the broad project level challenges, like how do you determine the relevance of particular bits of information, a lot of stuff about the security situation considerations within the Internet of Things scenario, the amount of testing effort required, how to deal with human versus non-human inputs, how to deal with uncertainty, and so on. Then with the presentations and some of the questions and answers, we looked into some interesting architectural considerations. There was a conversation about the information-centric approach versus peer-to-peer and publish-subscribe type of architectures, what to do about queries, how to optimize, what subset of your ontologies or your knowledge base are you applying the queries on, how you distribute that and so on, how you apply rules at the point where they're needed. A lot of very interesting stuff on that. And slide 12, following on from that, the trade-offs. I think this is one of the main things that, for me at least, that came out of this is the trade-offs between the complexity of an ontology that you need for reasoning versus the challenges for that in the real-time processing of information, how to balance between a minimal ontology and drawing out the lemmas that you need and being able to apply just what you need for decision-making. So essentially the usefulness of different axiom types for individual tasks, applications, and so on. There's a little bit more of that on a later slide. I'll be very quick on that. Then number of semantic issues. Somebody noted that sometimes the semantics of a particular item that you're looking at, example is fire. Is fire an observation or is fire actually a thing that's on fire? So being able to semantically disambiguate between kinds of observation and topics of those observations, if you like. The use of a concept lattice, how to represent sequencing. Again, this comes back to time and events and so on. And then a number of more detailed conversations about tools and languages, what alternatives people use into Sparkle and RDF, if that was giving performance challenges, Pragmatic Web versus schema.org, and a lot of other tooling questions around logic translations and so on. So very useful chat, and in fact, there's a link at the end on a link to the synthesis slide, which page, which pulls a lot of that together a lot more strongly. And then finally, a couple of observations and insights, just pulling all that together. So slide 13. So what kinds of reasoning and decision support do we need for the Internet of Things? And what kinds of ontologies do we need, or what ontologies do we need to support the individual reasoning problems? And also, it'd be interesting to know how ontologies are currently being used for decision support. Are people using them directly with an automated reasoner, or are they applying domain-specific algorithms and, you know, various rules engines and things? How are people managing that balance between applying the decision-making and the reasoning where it's needed, and having the whole huge range of concept ontologies that you need for the range of concepts that are in the Internet of Things? And that really brings to trade item four, which is the trade-offs. There was an interesting conversation on the next slide, actually, on maybe there's a little bit more work to do formally on the trade-off between the integration of concepts and the application of formal reasoning for decision-making at the point where it's needed. So slide 14, then, just to really pull out that particular point, because I think it's one that's a useful synthesis point to talk about the integration side of it. A little semantics goes a long way. The trade-off then between the reasoning complexity and the requirements for real-time processing. So what a lot of folks have done is just use our light or some other minimal ontology for the actual ontology, and then focus the reasoner on the A-box reasoning. There's a lot of interesting challenges in physical connectivity, different network constraints and so on, that can really provide a challenge to the amount of processing that you're able to do. Maybe there is a pragmatically definable system of language and reasoner. So, you know, something beyond DL in its expressivity for being able to apply reasoning, but being able to somehow select or tune the pieces you need at the places where you need them. What would that language look like? Would it be some combination of, you know, a simple implicit taxonomy to integrate the concepts and so on, and you know, at what point do you put in the domain and range restrictions, and, you know, is there other pieces that are needed for such a solution? So that's a little question we wanted to leave you with. And slide 15, there's a link here to the synthesis page, which has a much better account of what went on than I've probably given you now. That's it for me.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. It falls to me to try to synthesize some of the work that's been done, summarize the work that's been done on connecting the standards work. So there is a slide deck to go with this one as well. Let me cue that up on my end. So I've taken a slightly different approach to doing this. What I've done is to try to make a pass, and it's a partial pass through all of the tracks, and not only the two presentations that were made to date in the standards track, but because the standards tend to be cited in other presentations, including the ones that we have heard today, I tried to add basically to the list work that has been started in that was started in this presentation. So what I did is to indicate what's been changed since the original draft of this slide deck as a way of tracking what we were exposed to, what was omitted in the first draft, and what some of the gaps might be. So I'm now skipping to slide two. That's just a shout out to the two presenters that we heard from, William Miller, who basically presented a great detail of the implementation and history of the XMPP standard, which is part of this ISO standard that's been called out. And then Jeff Brown, who spoke without benefit of slides about MQTT and its history. I'm going to slide four. This is one of my original slides about why to look at the standards. This is kind of perhaps too broad to be of use for our immediate purposes for ontology development. But the big picture for software engineers is to decide whether to do standards or not, or to solve a domain-specific problem or one that a project sponsor has in mind. And sometimes you need to argue for adopting or not adopting a standard. So we might want to revisit this when we do the synthesis and the communique and see whether there are arguments to be made for engineers to address some of the issues, some of the advantages to be gained by using standards as opposed to avoiding them, which can also reduce project time depending on the standard. Okay, moving to slide 5. This was a leftover slide from previously. I think this still applies. We just wanted to see where we stand in the standards world. We have touched on OASIS and ISO in this work. We haven't heard directly from the IEEE people, but we hope to contribute into that as a summary at the end of the summit. So those of you that are interested in participating in that, you might want to mention something in the chat. And I'm going to skip the influence maze and go to the approach slide, which is number 8. And I think we're pretty much looking at the same approach, but I've added a couple of things that were not on the original slide. One from Gary regarding the related lessons from the big data. I think we probably should go back to that work that was done last year at the summit and revisit some of the findings and see how to connect these two efforts together in a more systematic way. I had already mentioned middleware and agents. Those came out in some of the other presentations in other tracks. The CEP work was just mentioned. It could be that there's hitherto unmentioned work on embedded systems and real-time work that we haven't touched on that perhaps should be cited. Other than that, this slide has not changed. Going to the next slide, which is slide 9. I'm going to probably delete in session 2 this favorite use case and in favor of a more open-ended Q&A with our participants, because we have a pretty fully engaged audience with this already. So I have a set of questions regarding the standards that we will put out for session 2. So if those of you are committed to a deeper dive on the standard side, I'm open to suggestions for questions, but that's our current plan for session 2. Slide 10 is a new slide. This is identifying some standards, and I missed some here, so this is a work in process. Some of the standards and models that were cited that were not previously on the list were the process specification language, the constrained application protocol, some CEP models and standards, which I didn't list out here, the abstract services representation that's in XMPP, and a couple of the EU initiatives that were called out on by several of the speakers. On slide 11, I thought we might try to see how the standards address events and processes as a way of seeing which of the standards might serve certain domain-specific or cross-cutting requirements in standards. So I made a preliminary list here, which we don't need to go into in detail, but I think it's just a way to look, another way of looking at the standards, because the standards, looking at the standards as a survey, I'm involved in another group that needs to look at a big data standards for security and privacy, and frankly, the standards are so numerous and in some cases deep that it's difficult to do a thorough analysis. So if you go into them looking for a specific conceptual framework, you can peel out what might be of interest. So just a suggestion about how to go after the analysis of other standards. And going to slide 13, this is basically the same approach, trying to look at objects and things. Examples of those that have been taken from speakers are battery-powered sensors, the concentrators, actuators, communication channels, smart transducers. And I think several of the speakers have suggested that we may need sub-ontologies to do this, and I guess that's connected to bridged ontologies and so on. I'm not sure that The standards work here is going to inform us much in that, but it might be something to look at as we identify standards usefulness. Going to slide 13, this is the new slide. I thought it might be worth calling out the named network, data networking, and software-defined networks as possible standards that are going to inform IoT. Really didn't touch on this yet in any of the presentations that we've had to date, although I know a lot of these speakers are aware of this work already. So just this is just a tip of the hat in case someone wants to dive into this. Moving to slide 14, this is a schema provided by a third party that I thought I'd reproduce in here for the benefit of the ontology community. This was a named network data use case that was proposed by an author. So you sort of see the framework of an IoT kind of use case and how the network topology and different levels of granularity participate in the model. Okay, I'm looking at slide 15 now. These are this is an attempt to look at cross-cutting concerns, and what I mean by cross-cutting here is cross-cutting across standards. There's several of the speakers address this. Maybe you can, in some sense, all of them. Temporal measurement and reasoning across temporal events, geospatial message, how to parse the messages and interpret them. Is this really something we can afford to do when we're implementing projects? Are we going to end up relying on parsing and aggregation performed by others and other pieces of code obtained from others? What to do about ambiguities and weak definitions? Steve Ray mentioned the problem of meter. I think that's a good one to look at. I added groupings for workflow and orchestration. The Jack Hodges presentation on semantic workflow called this to mind. There's some standards about workflow not related to IoT directly, but that could be related to work on ontology, workflow, and orchestration. And then on subject to provenance, several have mentioned the Provo work. I think I haven't seen this before. I think this is potentially really useful stuff, if not the specifics here, but the general approach that was taken. This is from the Jensen talk. Going to the next slide, this is an approach that I like to take. I'm not sure how much leverage we're going to get out of this in the communique, but the design patterns are ways of influencing approaches taken by engineers in building new systems, especially for greenfield systems. So I mentioned a few of these. I didn't get across all the speakers, but this is a few of the potentially evolutionary/revolutionary design pattern changes that IoT could be adapted for new projects. I think these are probably self-evident. And moving to slide 17 now, this is lesson learned. This is very preliminary, and actually some of the other speakers that have already presented gave better examples of lessons learned that I'll probably steal from these. But a couple of examples came out during our talks as well as chats, like the Command Post of the Future. This is some previous work that DoD and DARPA sponsored that might be useful to look at again from the point of view of the work we're undertaking in the summit. I adapted a couple of things from Gary's work here for knowledge modeling languages that might be needed for IoT. These are all standards related issues, I think. I'm then in slide 18, I'm touching on this edge proximity. I think this might be either a design pattern or taxonomy consideration that we may need to look at further on the standard side, and that maybe this is a rehash of work that has been covered already in the distributed computing literature. And if that's the case, then we want to look at what's new in the standards. Are there new hybrid or design patterns that we can identify? I added a new slide, 19, for us to look at security, privacy, and resilience. This was touched on by Miller in the XMPP protocols, having to do with encryption and discovery issues. We should be looking probably at trust frameworks. The OASIS standard identifies quality of service. So we might have a quality of service metric that it has a more broad meaning than the one we're used to for voice over IP that might have to do with domain-specific issues for the Internet of Things. So that might be something we could contribute. And then the issue of ownership is an interesting one, both from legal and implementation perspective. So that was mentioned in the, I'm not to pronounce his name, the Voas paper. And then I won't go into detail on this, but I've annotated the slides 21 and further the, I've added some more things that were not on our original list of standards and initiatives that were mentioned by speakers that we had. I'll try to keep this current with our work as potential either appendices or things that we can work into the body of the communique. On slide 23, I added a few things that were challenges identified in some of the standards-related challenges that are identified by the speakers, like the similar design and how to do mapping and the fact that ontologies end up being, especially domain-specific, ontologies end up being driven by manufacturer considerations that actually can get in the way of abstract efforts by ontology engineering. And the rest of this is going to be the same. So I'll conclude my part of this presentation and try to open this open to discussion by everyone here.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Folks, if you're new to this, just raise your hand in the lower right of the chat room for a question or comment.
So just a comment, I guess, from me, since there's a moment of silence while people are marshaling their questions. I think there's a lot of detail richness in the presentations that we've got already, and that the level of granularity that we're going to put into the communique is going to be one of the challenges, you know. And who's the audience for this? Do we want to try to reach engineers building systems like this, or do we want to have a more inward focus that looks at ontology engineers themselves and that's more addressed to problems that we're already familiar with? Do people think about that? Okay, Leo, you want to give that a try?
Well, I'd like to make one comment here, which I don't think we've quite addressed yet. And it's because the Internet of Things is probably just too new, and ontology applications for that are too new. But we were concerned about an interoperability in track A, interoperability and integration, levels of granularity too. So in many cases, it seems what will be required if you're really going to be operating at large vertical and horizontal scales with objects across the Internet is to maybe use associational semantics to kind of localize where you really want to go as quickly as you could. So there's a trade-off between expressivity, if you will, and generality and the level of complex reasoning that you can do. So you can do very simple things very quickly. But in many cases, what you'd like to do is get to the local areas that you need to find whatever information or sensor data or objects on the Internet of Things as quickly as possible, because you may have to do a little more complex processing and reasoning at that low local level. And then somehow aggregate that from where you found those locales or areas of local information that could be fairly complex. So that's a level of granularity that we haven't really faced too much on the internet in other applications. Of course, we do face that, the applications I'm more familiar with are things such as defense, intelligence, and healthcare, and many of those applications, they're not really open to the full internet, and of course the things that exist on that Internet of Things within those application areas are not very rich yet, but we can imagine they're going to become much richer. So if you have to, for example, find out, how a specific thing is affects, if you want to make a change, for example, and you already have a complex set of facilities and equipment in play, and you want to just find out, well, how will this affect my existing infrastructure here if I make this change? Well, that's something that's extremely hard to do without, more complex granularity processing. So I just want to make that comment.
Hello, this is Gary. If you can hear me, I would make one comment supporting what Steve's reaction to Mark's question on the audience is. I think of the communique as being intended for a broad audience. The length of the communique sort of prevents us from really communicating adequately to people like engineers. But what we can do is reference material such as on standards and how we address certain things in our meetings from the communique. So I think we can have the best of both worlds, having a more general message and then having some underlying details, which we folks in the semantic community are good for, available to those audiences that want to follow up.
Okay, makes sense to me. Terry, go ahead. *7 if you need to.
I'm here. This is Terry.
We hear you.
I put a comment on the chat. It just kind of a niggling issue in the back of my mind that we keep talking about things like smart objects and or even data objects on a system somewhere, but we really never spend much time talking about real physical tangible things that may not even be marked, and the things that are exacerbated, like trust issues or identification. I don't know whether that's appropriate to this summit, but it's something I worry about.
But can you explain what that is? I'm not sure I follow that.
Well, if you're looking at a battlefield, you don't know what that thing down there is, whether it's a tank or a personnel carrier, whether it's an enemy or a friend. We've worked a lot on Blue Force things where we made sure everybody had a transponder. But if you're looking at an unknown geographic area and you're picking up objects in your sensors, whatever they are, you really don't have a way of permanently labeling them, at least not at the outset. So there are lots of physical tangible things that I would include in the Internet of Things, but that really don't have an electronic
signature.
A predefined identification.
You mean they don't have a signature, I guess, in some traditional sense, huh?
Well, they don't have a signature, or they've never been labeled.
Mm-hmm.
They have an ephemeral identification. The thing at this physical location is what I'm talking about. But if it moves, how did you know it moved? Well, you happen to have a short enough time frame when you're sampling that you could see that it had moved, but maybe not. So all of those things, and the real question is, are those also parts of the Internet of Things or not?
Yeah, good question. You might put that in the chat if you want to summarize that. And by the way, if I could use my presenter gifts here to add this, I was suggesting as a next year topic that we look at the geospatial issues, and that might be something you're interested in, because I know there's a lot of inference making on these battlefield systems that's being made about context that's inferred from positioning and temporal event inferencing and that sort of thing, and that might be something for next year. All right, we'll recognize Mike.
Hi, can you still hear me, or do I need
yes.
to re? Oh, good. Never know if that thing's permanent.
I know.
I just wanted to wanted to come back to Terry's point, because I think this is a really important point and worth unpacking. We touched on it briefly in track C, but I think the distinction is to be made between, you know, you think of a typical ontology, and what distinguishes an ontology from a data model is that the elements in the ontology stand in relation to some real-world thing rather than some data about the thing. So one's first instinct, the Internet of Things, then, is that the things in the ontology will be sensors and so on. But there's a remove here, because then those themselves stand in a relationship to the things they sense, the tanks and the pressure in the pressure chamber and the openness of the valve and so on. So I think there's some very careful intellectual footwork to be done on the kind of model theoretic or the sort of semiotics of, you know, if this element in this ontology represents that sensor, that sensor represents that thing out there in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, somebody mentioned in one of our talks, somebody talked about fire and said that fire is categorized as a kind of observation. Well, at the sensor level, of course, it is. But out there in the world, a fire is a very hot thing that will burn your house down. Or as it turned out, actually, it probably meant artillery fire in this context.
Yeah, that was my comment last week.
Exactly. So I think we didn't really unpack that last week. We just said, oh, no, you meant artillery fire. But the same problem exists. Are you talking about an observation of fire, or are you talking about getting shot at? And it's a very similar challenge, possibly the same challenge, that we see in some other ontologies between when you're talking about a hierarchy of kinds of thing in your subsumption hierarchy. So is the taxonomy that's the background of your ontology, and is a relationship of things or of topics? So, you know, I've seen people, I won't name names, get mixed up on these between categorizing topics. So, for example, a book about French grammar is a kind of book about French. That sits in it, is a hierarchy. But French grammar is not a kind of French. So there's a distinction between how you arrange topics or observations in a hierarchy versus how you arrange the things that they're about in a hierarchy. And I think we need to be careful with that.
Mike, sort of a redirect. And what is your take on the framework of the situation awareness work that was presented last week?
If I'm honest, I was too busy running the session to actually pay attention. Sounds to me, right, now I think of it, that's the answer, isn't it? Because the situation awareness, it's not just taking events, but it's describing all these things that have temporality and describing them as a situation. So that belongs in the ontology of the real things. And we just need to make sure that the, as we integrate these ontologies, that the ontology of the situation and likewise the process ontologies that Michael talked about are distinct from the ontological representation of the pressure switch or the observation from the hilltop or whatever. So yeah, I think that's where the answer lies. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I know it sounds like several of us have had military-sponsored work done on situation awareness that got our attention. I'm not sure how.
Not me. I was in an army once, but it was a long time ago, and I don't live there anymore.
Well, it's let's just say a lot of grant writing's been done around that. I'm not sure how much successful work's been done.
And you may never know.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep talking unless someone puts their hand up here. Do we have a sense about the primacy of the SSN ontology? Does it seem to be the one that's sort of, you know, controlling the oxygen in the air by having the most adoption? Is there something about that as a design pattern, or is it just the history of that standard that deserves the attention?
This is Gary. I guess I should say something about that, right?
Sure.
Well, I don't think of it as dominant. I think it as a good representation of a portion of IoT as opposed to the whole of IoT. So I think it has bridges to other aspects of IoT, such as the networking aspects, which need their own detailed modeling. So I think it represents maybe a prototype, a starting point, but it is not necessarily a single center.
Mm-hmm. Well, I added the named network project proposals to my standards list for the reason that the OASIS MQTT protocol is really mostly a networking thing. When you look at the standard, it's mainly about, it's just a networking thing. It doesn't really talk about the things or much that you can map an ontology onto. But the named network side of it is trying to put, you know, information into the network. That's the whole idea about that. And it seems like a more useful model to build a standard on.
Yeah. So, yes, so the observations are obviously an entry point, but then you have things translated to data, and you have data management, which needs to be modeled properly, and communication of the data, concentration of the data, things like that, things that SSN doesn't address, but sort of gives you a start on, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Steve, *7 to unmute.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We hear you.
Actually, I was just going to riff off of that last remark Gary made, which was I entirely agree that once you get to the data itself, then you got to worry about things like units of measure and what the data means. And so, you know, once it's turned into data, that's where SSN leaves off, I think, and a lot of industrial interoperability work picks up. So I know we touched on units of measure briefly a little bit, and there's some activity in semantics world on that as well.
Do you think that quality of service is one of those things that needs to be looked at?
Oh, sure. I think, let's see, well, and there's lots and lots of aspects that need to be touched on Internet of Things, privacy, security, quality of service, the semantic meaning of the data itself, the different contexts in which a single piece of data is used, pretty much anything that the internet in general is trying to deal with, I think it gets touched on. So I don't think we're going to be able to separate the Internet of Things from other internet issues, mm-hmm. nor should we.
I could add, this is Gary again, I would add again, I think the semantics of services is very important. And I think if you start to consider things like smart objects or local regional smart objects, they have to know about the other sensors, sort of something close to what Terry might have been getting at. You know, what do they know about the things that are around them? They may be pre-programmed to understand some of them, or they may get to be smart enough to sort of over time learn what they are and be able to dynamically interact with them more. And so that's a lot of smarts that we really haven't covered at all in things like SSN.
I'll just add one other thing, which is, I think the one thing that's different about Internet of Things is it's the bridge between the physical world and the computational world. So we've mentioned sensors, which is basically getting physical phenomena into the information world. And then the converse of that is actuators, which take information world and turn it back into physical movement or some physical phenomenon of some sort. So the Internet of Things sits at that interstice between the physical and the informational. And you can look, you can divide the universe in that way as well, as, you know, including people or a bunch of sensors and a bunch of actuators. And you can look at everything as either one or the other, or purely computational, or purely physical.
So, Steve, what do you say to the skeptics who say this is just warmed over instrumentation work?
Well, I think the fact that it's part of a larger network, which is now, communication to the network has a lot to do with it, I think. And that's where ontology comes in, because ontology tries to capture context, whereas instrumentation in the past, I think, the context was presumed, it was very local, and you didn't have to do any metadata kind of things to make sure that that was understood in a broader context. But now that we're talking about going across context, when you talk about Internet of Things, I think actually it's an opportunity for where semantics and ontology can play an important role.
Mm-hmm. No disagreement. That's probably where the big data variety thing enters into this picture.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many times people, all of us, I think, forget how things can be taken out of context and then misunderstood. You know, some people are very narrow, some people are broad, but maybe not universal, and you've got to sort of decide how universal you want to be.
Terry, I was just going to mention, did you capture in the chat what you gave us in the conversation here? If not, you might want to put some notes in there, because I thought that was interesting, that riff about semiotics and so on. By the way, the answer to the question about is it warmed over instrumentation, it sounds like what Sun used to say. Remember, the network is the what was their byword? The network is the machine or something?
This is Gary again. Steve mentioned in passing the idea of context. Also, situation was mentioned as part of one of the other sessions. I think modeling this type of thing so you sort of understand things in context is going to be very important. And of course, we're a long way from doing that, but a start on a good situational pattern would be helpful.
Go ahead, Leo.
Yes. I just wanted to bring up one additional point. I mean, it comes kind of out of intelligent agent technology originally, but I think it's going to apply here too. Back in those days, in the heyday of intelligent agent technology, you also had things like proxy agents. So agents who could act for other agents. So I think that in the Internet of Things, you're going to have a need for proxy things that really they may not exist in their own right, but as facilitators and aggregators of other things that have maybe less communicative ability and less understanding of their own data. And in many cases, they're things in the Internet of Things, but they're not, necessarily directly tied to physical objects, but in fact have to interact with physical objects for at higher levels in order to get larger things accomplished, including, queries and situational awareness and decision making and so forth. So just that comment.
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, on a completely different subject, just wondered what people thought about some of the comments we pulled out in track C about the balance between, lightweight ontologies for integrating the concepts across a wide range of subject matter versus heavyweight ontologies and rules and sets of axioms that can be applied to the actual decision making that's required at the sort of application end of things. I don't know if I described it very well, but in my mind, this is actually quite a big thing, even beyond the Internet of Things, the sort of lightweight semantics you actually need to integrate concepts versus the much heavier weight semantics of semantic web reasoning applications, is there more to be thought about in how to balance those? Do we need two kinds of ontology? Do we need some architecture that, you know, identifies how to apply the reasoning where the use case is, as it were? Does the problem make sense to people? Be interested in people's thoughts and reactions to that.
Must be too hard a question.
Either that or the answer is so obvious, I'm the only one wondering about it.
No, it's not obvious.
No, no. Michael's slides had some really good stuff on this last time, and so did many of the others. So I just wonder if that's like an interesting crossover between the integration track and the decision-making track in some way.
Well, those of you that I met at the summit last year know my take on this is that software engineers often are engaged in doing lightweight semantic work, but they don't call it that. It's not called out. Terry's asking in the chat what we mean by lightweight.
So specific examples that were given included using our lights to integrate the concepts across the whole range of sensors. Various other architectures were mentioned as well. My take on this is a slightly different domain, and in the finance domain, is I'm starting to see a similar tension between how we describe financial instruments across the whole industry space, and we use very deep type hierarchies and classification theory to disambiguate things, but without putting lots of restrictions and other axioms in there. And when we hand that across to the semantic web folks to turn it into more respectable owl, as it were, you get these much more complex, much more involuted ontologies that are a lot harder to integrate, to the extent I'm starting to wonder if they're almost two things that need two languages or at least two namespaces. Or not, you know, maybe I'm the only one that's starting to think that. But, you know, when you're integrating across a very broad space, you just need very high-level abstract concepts and then a very deep hierarchy of kinds of things so that you can talk about different kinds of things in the same model rather than having stovepiped independent ontologies that work fine with an application but are a lot harder to integrate. And I thought some of the findings that we had on a couple of last week's presentations seem to validate that, but at a much more pragmatic level. So I just wonder if that's something worth exploring.
Terry, go ahead. Do you want to reply to that? You may have to star 7, Terry.
Sorry. Yes, I think we're talking about. I put a chat out. I put a thing on the chat. It sounds like we really need to have ontologies that help us decide or differentiate among ontologies to be applied, whether it's a lightweight or a heavyweight or a specific object definition versus a sensor definition. You know, we're kind of getting ourselves into the mud here, but maybe it's something we could put down as an open question. That's all for me. Yeah, I think Mike Bennett captured it very well, made ontology.
I was just writing more or less what you said. Thanks.
Yeah, right.
So, Mike, I'm wondering if one of the use cases that you have in mind is something that I'm monitoring. I have this unrelated project that's mostly unrelated that tracks the XML standard that's going to be used by people who manage mortgages in the United States. So it's just mostly an XML standard, but it's highly detailed. Are you saying that the ontology that gets adapted to that ends up needing a different kind of namespace because it's a different sort of creature?
I'm starting to think that. I don't think everybody involved in our activities necessarily agrees with me, so I'm just putting it out there. Are you talking about the MISMO schema by any chance?
Yes.
Yeah, I just came off a call that overlapped with this one. We have a FIBO loan content team who are working on extending FIBO to integrate and identify the concepts within MISMO. As you know, MISMO is more of a logical model expressed in XML. So yes, some very interesting work happening there. But you know, each time we take, you know, the original work that I pulled together was a very naive, very light use of OWL, and all the semantic web expert looked at it and went, oh, this is horrific, we can't use it, we've got to add all these restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the more restrictions you add, the more you have to simplify the actual business semantics of the thing to make the thing even load or run in Protégé or anything like that. And you know, I still think maybe that's closer to an operational level that should be framed as a different kind of model at a more logical or physical level, and that maybe there is some merit in what we originally did with the very lightweight semantics. So that's why I was interested to see so many reference to lightweight semantics at last week's sessions. I think the jury's still out. I'm not going to, you know, put my neck on the block and say no, it must be this way, but I think it's worth thinking about.
Yeah, well, my two cents on that is that maybe that's not the kind of scalability that we're talking about in the chat here, but on the few projects, and I'm talking about under six, the ones that I've worked on, scalability was a huge problem, even with a modest ontology. You just couldn't get the performance that you needed for the consumers that wanted to use it.
Right, and I get a lot of pushback from the folks wanting to enhance the models to be more, quote, meaningful, that try to make the model much simpler. And what you would do in a application ontology with, you know, a couple of hundred nice little terms and classes and so on, versus what you're used to seeing in MISMO or any other financial industry source, which is, you know, 3,000 terms as a normal kind of model. You know, maybe we're trying to use the same tool to do two different jobs.
Ron, go ahead. Star 7.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Hey, I think, as I just mentioned in my chat, most of the conversation that's been going on is about the Internet of Things. But I think our summit here goes beyond that in terms of there are people also in the picture. Now, people are sensors too, in a sense, okay? You can look at it that way. So hopefully, I'm hoping that in some of the talks in the future, this will be addressed. At least on March 12th, I think Ramesh Jain is going to talk a little bit about social networks. So just to keep in mind, that's all, that this is beyond IoT as such, what we are talking.
Okay.
So it's actually kind of puts in a different, a little more complex city into the situation. So.
So I know in the Army world, that would be the forward observer. The sensor fusion people have to worry about forward observer reports and integrating that with what physical sensors would be telling them.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Classic. Okay, great. Well, we may have reached a conclusion as far as our effort level, if not the substantive conclusion here. So I will call the meeting to a close now, unless people have other topics. We will meet again next Thursday. I'll try to get the word out a little better to broaden our participation.